Welcome, Third Rock listeners, to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo, Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller and the Fusion Creative Brands. And each week, I have the privilege of speaking with extraordinary leaders and entrepreneurs who are reshaping the way industries work. These conversations go way beyond the surface to explore the core philosophies, the lessons, and the challenges that define the brands that we admire today. And one of the greatest rewards of this podcast is the opportunity to share the insights of some of the brightest minds in business, people who are passionate about pushing boundaries and redefining what's possible. And as I always say, the stories we tell are the brands we build. And this show is a testament to the power of that concept. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Brand Storyteller. I'm Devo, the Brand Storyteller. Welcome to the Brand Laboratory. Branding is not a trend to us. It is the truth behind everything we build. I literally believe it's the foundation for everything about our small business. This is not a typical business podcast. I'd like to invite leaders like yourself, Leonard, onto the show to unpack what has shaped you, your trajectory. What are your challenges? What are your lessons? What are some of your failures, which I don't see as failures. They're opportunities to learn, right? And how are you building something now that when you look back, you know what? I got did a pretty cool thing with this business. I affected a lot of people. I made a difference. I'm Devo. I've been hosting this show now. This is my fifth year in podcasting. This is our 39th episode of the Brand Laboratory, so I'm really excited about that. And our guest today, Leonard Schneider, he didn't just build a business. He's creating a framework for professionals to lead with clarity and authority in their space where trust isn't an optional thing. And that's a big deal to me. No like trust paradigm. We talk about that every single episode. It is how you build your business. It's how you find your dedicated followers and friends and colleagues and collaborators. So, my man, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
So good to be here, Devo. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I look at every single guest that comes across my desk. Mariel sends them over to me. She highlights things that are good, things that are bad, things that would catch my eye. I love talking to people who are in the branding world just because that's the space I operate in. So mainly just so I can piggyback off the cool things you're doing and then call it my own. I'm just going to jump straight into the show. I'd like to just go no frills, no censor on this. What do you think, and this is a question I ask everybody, what do you believe about success that most people in your industry might fight you on?
It is such a good question, and we're diving so deep so quick. I love it. So what would I think about success that most people would think is impossible? Really, you as the business owner, you as the CEO, you as the face of the brand, have the authority and the control over everything. I don't care if you delegated it. I don't care if it, quote, wasn't your fault. Guess what? Maybe you didn't set someone else up for success. Maybe you didn't package things the way that they should have been. Maybe you didn't delegate in the best way. But when you come from that space of responsibility, and we're getting a little esoteric here, but when you come from that space, it makes it a lot easier for you to handle problems and to grow forward. Because if you're always blaming other people, guess what? You don't have control. Right? If it was Mary's problem and Bob's problem, then Leonard can't actually fix it, right? But if I realize that, oh, that was Leonard's misstep, or that was Leonard's not doing it correctly, and then it passed on to Mary, then guess what? I have control of that and I can shift. Mary's maybe not the right person in that role. Maybe it wasn't communicated the right way. Any of that. So I like being able to take responsibility, accountability. I'm really big on that because it has me stay in my power.
I appreciate the response. I have two young, well, not young anymore. They're teenage daughters. And one of the things that I have taught them from day one is that in my framework of parenting and just life in general, we always control how we can respond to every situation, right? And that control, that response control lends itself to our personal responsibility. Like, how do we show up in the world, right? Do we take ownership of our failures? Do we take ownership of everything? And I love that you said that because I believe at the core of humanity, and I do love going esoteric, by the way, so bring it on. At the core of humanity, if you were to ask me what is the single most important variable that we as humans bring to the table, it literally centers around personal responsibility because that encompasses a whole vacuum of other traits. But back to the question. So in terms of we control everything in our business, in our life, et cetera, and I completely wholeheartedly agree with you. How would other leaders potentially disagree with that? What are some of the, what's some pushback around that question?
Yeah, I think a lot of other business owners would say we can't control everything. We can't control how we're priced in the market. We can't control the clients. Like, we're trying this method and it's not working. And we tried this method and it's not working. And my response to that would be, where are you not going? So you've tried three ways of advertising and it didn't work. Okay, so what's the fourth? We can't control how we're priced in the market. Then we need to position ourselves a little bit differently so that our value is higher to that person. I had a conversation yesterday and it was with a wonderful gentleman. And he was talking about how bookkeepers are commoditized, right? They, person one can do your books or person two, and seemingly they're the same. And one person's going to charge $3,000 a month and the other person's going to charge $750 a month. You're probably going to choose the lower cost one, right? Because they're doing the same thing. At least that's what the business owner understands. But if you can package that in a way where now we're just not a bookkeeper, we're a CFO advisor, right? We're instead of, I loved how he said this. He said, instead of looking backwards, which is bookkeeping, right? Recording the past. Now we're looking forward. We're looking at CFO advisory services, which is how do we plan for taxes? How do we plan for cash flow? How do we do that thing? So that conversation was with Adam Lean from the CFO Project and just a really great, insightful conversation we had.
It's all about the messaging. You said, how can we repackage that? And by the way, speaking from personal experience, all bookkeepers are not created equal. And I can speak from experience on that because I had a bookkeeper for many years who I thought was handling my business. And I'm one of those people that sort of outsources the things that I don't really, I'm not a zone of genius in. I like to keep my finger on the pulse of stuff, but I always outsource the things so I can focus on what I'm best at. Bookkeeping is one of those things I don't really enjoy doing.
Yep.
Anyhow, she was not doing what she was supposed to be doing. And when it really came down to the nitty-gritty and I was getting audited because of the things that she wasn't doing. So all bookkeepers are not created equal. Just a sidebar, do your diligence on that and find somebody who understands your business and who clearly understands what it is you need from them. Because a lot of times it's just left to an assumption and you know where they say about that. I'd like to talk a little bit about your journey and how you got from where you were to where you are today. Is there a moment in that space that, let's just say, broke you, that sort of was an epiphany for you that turned you, altered, adjusted, speed bumped you, but put you on a different trajectory for your life to where you are now?
For me, that was really the pinnacle of my 9-to-5 career because I had worked my entire career. I started as a marketing intern, marketing coordinator, marketing manager, director of marketing, and then ultimately the CMO for an international law firm. And at that point, I was like, I've made it, right? Like I'm at the top title. I can't go any further. I could go to a larger company, but I'm at the top. And I had my window office on Wilshire Boulevard in LA, and I was looking north and I could see Beverly Hills to my left and I could see the Hollywood sign to my right. And I was like, this is great. I'm having calls and I'm looking across the city and I'm looking at the Hollywood sign and this should be enough. But guess what? It wasn't. I was like, this is not what I want to do every single day, to get up and solve these types of problems, do this type of work. I liked the work. I loved the work, I could even say, but it wasn't fulfilling within me. I felt like I was made for more. And I think that I wish everyone could have been there in that moment, because I think we all would have understood that's a very human feeling, is feeling like we were made for something more. And so that situation, I realized that I was never going to find what I was truly made for, what I could truly do, break the shackles, until I was working for myself. Instead of earning a paycheck or instead of getting a paycheck, it was more about creating the paycheck. And that, I think, was the moment that broke me. And I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm done trying to please other people. For what? Yes, there's bonuses. Yes, there's incentives. But at the end of the day, I was, in some regard, capped in what I could make monetarily. I was capped in what I could do as far as like the services, right? Working for a law firm, it's you're providing legal services. And so I realized that at the core of myself, I was a marketer. I'm a growth-driven person, both personally and professionally, right? So I've spent a boatload of time and a boatload of money on growing myself personally because I know that what I'm able to do in my personal life and how I think about things, just like what we were talking about a minute ago, right? Accepting responsibility, that is something that's personal, but it translates over into business.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so being able to grow both of those, and then also having the ability to, I run a PR and marketing agency today. And that means I can do an array of different things. I can consult an array of different services, clients, et cetera. So I love being able to have that flexibility. And it's a really great journey that I've been on. Not always upward, right? There's been ups and downs, but I think if your general trajectory is upward, then that's all part of the process.
Yeah, you're speaking my jam. You and I have a similar trajectory in that space. Same story, walked away from multiple six-figure business doing similar things to what you're doing. And it really wasn't because I was necessarily, I don't want to say I was unfulfilled because I was busy as fuck. I was doing a lot of different things. And because of my nature, I had my fingers in a lot of different areas of the business at the time in the corporate world. But for me, I realized at the end of the day, and you just said something a second ago, I wasn't able to create on my terms. I was creating something for someone else. And while I was getting rewarded financially for it, it was like a missing gap, like a void in my soul. And I just realized that the only way to do that is I'm going to have to get back to creating in some capacity. And I love that you said that because one of the other things that were part and parcel with my trajectory in the corporate world that I also noticed that I was missing is there was no personal development going on in terms of who I was as a human. And I started to realize that I was getting caught up in this like vapid existence. And it was affecting literally everything from I was married at the time. It was affecting my relationship with my wife. We're now divorced. It was just like the sort of all the things that I was going after weren't what I'm going after now. And I wasn't able to do any of these things that I'm doing now until I found that out like way back in that space. And I love that you said that. Flexibility, freedom, creativity, autonomy, all of those things are now things that I own, I'm personally responsible for, and I get to now teach other people how I did that. So I love that you're saying that. In terms of the personal piece, I want to touch on that for a second. A lot of people haven't made that connection that you are only as strong as you are as an individual, first and foremost, with your business. So, if you have suffrage in your personal life and you haven't dealt with some of those shadows, responsibility, self-awareness, whatever it is, right? That's going to eventually show up in your business, right? Can you speak a little bit about that? Because you just touched on that, but I think it's a really important point for people to understand that your personal life, your personal development, and your professional life go hand in hand. They have to be in balance.
I thought that my professional self and my personal self were two different people, right? I'm still the same human. I'm the same sack of flesh and bones that is doing both. And maybe this comes from the industry, right? Working in law is by nature a very conservative industry. It's very buttoned up, right? And I think that in that you lose a bit of yourself, or you can lose a bit of yourself because you're trying to fit into the mold of what you think a lawyer would be or a law firm would be. So I would assume that this would be the same for like doctors too, right? They can't bring their full self to work because they've got to be that authoritative professional. They have to be the trusted advisor for their patients. And
Let me interrupt. I don't agree with that. I think that they can bring their full selves to work.
I agree.
They just haven't figured out, or they're just not self-aware that they should show up personally in the same capacity. That's my
I
belief.
totally agree.
I'm
I
glad we
totally
agree with that.
agree. And it wasn't until I was in a therapy session years ago and I was talking about this and I was like, there's like a disconnect, right? Like I've got to turn certain things off and then turn certain things on. And I was like, it doesn't feel good. And life is all about feeling. Like, are you happy every day, right? So when I realized that those two can be intertwined, it really opened up my eyes because then I realized, okay, this is way deeper than even I'm thinking about it at that time. So I'm one set of flesh and bones, right? But then you go into the family situation and you're one person. You go into a friend group and you're a different person. You go into business and you're a different, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, well, The most successful people, you look at Richard Branson, right? Or Mark Cuban or whoever, and go with the example if you don't like those people, that's not my point. But the sentiment of what I'm saying is that these successful people are the same person on the court as they are off the court. And when you can bring that holistic view or that holisticness to everything that you do, of course, there's a time and place for everything. But being able to throttle that appropriately, but still by being yourself, and this is where the personal work comes in, is that if I'm pouring into myself personally, it's going to help me in friend relationships and in family and in professional and everywhere else. So it starts here. It starts at home.
100%. I love that. And I echo all of that. It felt, I want to back up because I didn't know what I didn't know at the time. I just knew that I felt empty inside. And I'll tell you what, if I may tell a small story for a minute, it really hit home for me. I had a really wonderful boss and he really gave me some amazing opportunities. And I don't feel regretful about any of that because of the experiences that I learned just operating for a multi-million dollar business. But I saw the writing on the wall when I got in trouble for improving a process with something, saved the company literally millions of dollars. And I circumvented the normal protocol, which would be like 400 fucking meetings, red tape up the wazoo, filling out forms, going through the chain of command. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to make a call on this. I'm managing this project. We're just going to circumvent all that. Dude, you don't even know what an uproar it caused. The lifetimers, the corporate lifetimers. And I got sat down and I had to go before the CEO and I was having these conversations and I was basically slapped across the face and told that I had stepped outside of the chain of command. It wasn't my place to make this. And I was like, did I not just save you almost $7.5 million and cut the project from a 12-month project to a 2-month project? And they're like, yeah, but you're missing the point. And I was like, is there any other point to miss?
Is there
Like,
another point? Yeah.
is there possibly another point to this? And I just realized at that point that my career, and there had been all sorts of writings on the wall with similar stories like this. I realized at that point that no matter who I was or no matter what I was going to do, I would never fit into the mold that they wanted. And I was like, that was the beginning of the end for me. And so, I feel everything that you said. It's funny. So, this sort of idea of zigging when other people are zagging, you seem like that type of person, right? What was it? When did you realize in your world, whether it was in the corporate or now as an entrepreneur, that was this autonomous take you have on the world and that's how you were going to operate? Was there anything that happened, like a story like I just told?
See, I had wonderful bosses all the way through, but I don't think that I had any event like yours where it was like a singular event. But I always had the thought in my mind that, like, they're doing these things, I can do them too. They're making these moves, they're signing new clients, they're making more money every month, they're XYZ. And if I stayed where I stayed, it was comfortable, right? Like, it was comfortable. I was a CMO. I was director of operations. I had a leadership role, right? I came in every day. I had an office. It was, by definition of most people, that was successful. But it just came back to the same recurring thing of I want more, or I want more freedom. I want more to grow into. And so I realized that for me, the path to do that was going off on my own. It was doing my own thing because then I could fail on my own, but then I could also succeed on my own too.
Sure. Speaking of failure, can you talk about some of those first real failures as an entrepreneur that has shaped or taught you who you are as a leader today?
Coming back to the title of our show today, right? It's about branding. And I initially went out and I thought, I've got all this experience, I've got all this credibility. Right? My resume looks great. So clients are going to be like, let's go. Was I so far from the truth? Because that was not the case, right? I didn't create a brand, even though my whole professional career had been around creating brands. And even in law, right? Like you create a law brand. And we would operate a few different firms, and one would be to high-end businesses, one would be to low-end consumers, right? So we were operating two brands, very different messaging, very different target markets. And I was always creating brands. But then I went out on my own and half my brain fell off. And I was like, nope, I can just be Leonard. And people are going to be like, Leonard Shiner's amazing. Guess what? No one cared. No one cared a bit. And I remember the first set of proposals I sent out had my name, like where you would put the logo. And looking back years after, I was like, that was so dumb. Like, immensely dumb. Because I didn't follow my own method, which I didn't create until later. So hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah.
But my method of BMG, brand, market, grow. So most people, most entrepreneurs, in the initial stages will hop right into that middle stage.
Yeah.
They're going to hop right into market, right? I need clients. I need cash flow. I want to serve clients. I want to make money. Great. We need a market, right? We need to reach out to people so that we can get them to hire us. But we don't take the momentary beat before that and realize, what the heck are we doing? Like, what problem are you actually solving? And I think that's a disconnect for a lot of newbie entrepreneurs is that they think that they're solving a problem people care about.
Perception is reality.
Right. Really, they're not. So if the market is not willing to pay you for it, that's not a good offer, right? It's like selling ice to an Eskimo. Like, they don't need it. You're not solving a problem for them. But if you're selling ice to someone in Miami Beach in July, guess what? You're solving a problem. So when I'm looking at helping clients, we're going through the BMG method. That is the way that a professional service provider really nails it on the first or second try. So starting with brand, it's not just your logo and your colors, but it's who are you serving? What are you serving? It's creating your offer and packaging it in a way with your credibility. Right? People often don't think about that, right? They're like, I'm a business, I'm an entrepreneur, we can do this for you. Where's your credibility to back that? You talk about the no like trust factor. Well, trust is not something that's optional. We're not going to buy from someone if we do not trust them. And humans buy from humans. So you as a human have to trust me as a human to do what we're talking about. And so starting in that brand phase is where I start all clients today. And I actually had to go back. That's why I created Geek House, because it was like, okay, it's bigger than Leonard. My vision expanded. It wasn't just Leonard for Leonard. Now this was more. It was an agency, right? It's not just me at the helm, it's other people who are going to help deliver on the promises that we're making. So going through that, what was definitely a pitfall of reaching out and thinking that people were going to hire me as a solo consultant for agency level work, which we're still doing the same thing. I'm still delivering the same service. I've got a team that helps, but at the end of the day, it was how it was packaged. Because we all go down the cereal aisle and we see the healthy cereal, which has boring packaging, which we should all be eating. And then we see like Fruity Pebbles and it looks fun and exciting. And that's the packaging that we want to fly off the shelf. That's attractive to us. So it's all about the packaging, even in professional services.
That's an interesting metaphor. What are the fallacies of that, though? Because the less attractive box of cereal, to borrow your lexicon, is the one that's better for you. So, as a business owner, as somebody who is a CEO and entrepreneur of their own business and shaping your own life and providing the solutions that you provide with Geek House, what is the fallacies of people taking the shiny apple first as a consumer rather than understanding? And this sort of goes back to you as a brander, because people are going to look for the shiny fruit or the fruity pebbles when they shop. And so often we're confused just because there's so many options out there, to borrow your lexicon again, from the grocery store and the cereal aisle. But often the things that is best for us is not what we should actually be consuming. So there's two questions. So what are the fallacies of that in terms of interpretation, right? But then what responsibility, to borrow that term again, do we have as business owners to make sure that our packaging looks like the type of packaging that we want the real audience, our real buyer, to actually consume, even if it is boring, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. So I think a lot of people get caught up in the raw of that thing that they're wanting. They want a marketing person. They want a branding person. They want someone to handle their PR. They want their cloud compute, whatever it is, right? And they are drawn to the people who are marketing the most. So you're flicking through Instagram or you're online, wherever it is that you're seeing the ad, and whoever is giving the most impressions to you is that shiny Fruity Pebbles box, right? It's calling out to you almost off the shelf. But not always are those people the best at doing what they do. Because if you're going to be a marketer and you've got 1,000 clients, unless you have 1,000 staff members, you're not able to really provide the dedicated service, the in-depth, the pragmatic advice that a business needs to grow. Because yes, there's general trends, success leaves clues, but every business is unique. And so someone who can roll up their sleeves and actually get in and know the lay of the land and make the tweak and make the tweak and make it work, that is more valuable than someone who's going to run you through the same program, pop you out the other side, and great, the results are what they are, right? Some of those raw solutions lack the individual attention that is really needed to make a business successful. So,
I think it's important to note, and I appreciate everything you just said, and I don't disagree with any of it. But I think if, and I'm just curious your feedback on this. I think one of the mistakes I see a lot of small businesses make is they're trying to be all things to all people and not realizing that there's a very specific buyer that they should only be marketing to. And some of those buyers have larger volume clients and smaller vol. I'm a smaller volume type of business. I really only work with a select number of people every year. I take on a very specific type of client. I focus my zone of genius on a very specific type of solution. And I think one of the things that we forget is that in our branding, in our boxing, in our cereal box, that we need to be very clear and articulate on who we are, what we stand for, and the problem that we solve. Because when we broadcast that, whether on social media or our cereal box, the right type of people are going to receive that and understand that it's them we are talking to. Do you agree with that?
very true. And to that point, if there's a professional service business, great, that's who we serve. But if you're an e-com business, I'm not an idiot, right? So I can offer some
For
thoughts,
sure.
but by far, I am not your e-com person. That's not my zone of genius. That's not the lane that I run in. To your point, it's good to niche down because what's the saying that the riches are in the niches? It's true. Because if you're going to buy a general solution, if think about yourself, right? When you're looking for something, maybe a doctor, right? You're looking for a doctor. If you're going to a generalist or you're going to even a specialist, right? But they're a specialist in a general area of things, that's okay. They'll probably be able to help you. But if you're experiencing fatigue, if you're experiencing whatever your symptom is, right? And then there's a doctor who is all focused on that. We see this a lot on the online coaching type of space, is that there's providers who are very specific at what they do. I was talking to a lady the other day and she solves adolescent constipation,
Very specific.
very specific. And she was like, it wasn't until I niched down because I was doing gut health, I was doing constipation, I was doing this and that, and I was doing all these things. And it wasn't for kids, it was just for everyone. Gut health for everyone. Hold on a minute. You're going to tell me that the gut health of an 80-year-old woman is the same as an 8-year-old boy? Very different, very different. So, how could she, at the highest degree, serve everyone? She can't. So, once she narrowed down, once she got specific, and now we're doing adolescent constipation, you need to be under 12 years old. Guess what? Now she's easy. Now she's able to more easily convert clients, serve them. She's talking to a very specific type of person, much
Yeah, I'd like to reframe that if I may, because I appreciate the concept, and for niching down, I do think that there is a market for certain types of businesses, but I also think that there is a market for becoming the niche yourself and actually creating that niche, which is what it sounds like she's done. That niche didn't exist per se before, but instead of being boxed into only working with 12-year-olds in an endocrinology perspective, maybe she can become a niche and create a framework around all the different spaces that she operates best and she gets filled up with emotionally, right? Because then if she's doing that, then she's obviously going to be doing the things that she loves. I appreciate all that take. Before we jump into the second half of the conversation, just for a minute, clarify for my audience what it is you do. What is Geek House? Who is Leonard Shiner? Who do you serve? Who is your niche? Or what niche have you created that you're finding some excellence now?
Yeah, so coming from my background in law, it was all professional services, right? How are you solving the problems of other people? and how do you package your expertise? What makes you as law firm A better than law firm B? And so now I run Geek House, which is a PR and marketing agency. We're very focused in helping service-based businesses. So law firms, doctors, accountants, even like realtors, right? You're providing a service that is intangible, right? If we're going back to the cereal example, if you've got something, you can flip it over and see the details, right? But in a intangible service like legal service or like marketing or PR, you've got to be able to package it in a way where people understand the value. So we're focused on serving the professional service provider. So the lawyer, the doctor, the accountant, the realtor, and we're helping them grow their personal brand because we know that today, if your personal brand is lacking, people don't have the no trust factor in order to do business. And so that is really where we start on that brand side of things. And we're helping get you in the press because you're probably an expert. You've probably never had a third party with a good amount of authority, like Bloomberg, like ABC, like CNN. You've never had a third party who's validated you as an expert in what you do. And so when you can say, guess what? And this is true, I've been featured on Forbes as a PR expert, right? That gives me a lot of authority to talk about this
For sure.
because I know the ins and outs. I've done it for myself. I'm a product of my own service. So when I'm talking with a client, I can go really deep and answer the nitty-gritty questions. So that's what we're all about, helping people grow, set up their platform, right? I say you can't shoot a cannon from a canoe because your blowback is going to just sink you. But if you've built your foundation, you've built your warship, now you've got the credibility, you're stacking your chips. Guess what? Now we can shoot cannons. Now we can go and have JV partners. We can go do marketing. We can go do big things because we've got the platform that allows us to do that.
So you're doing, and you're reinforcing what I just said. While you have niched down professional service providers, you have created sort of your own niche in a sense where you're providing PR visibility and credibility to a very specific audience. But I imagine what you do for a legal professional is markedly different than what you would do for a doctor. So you are still a generalist in that capacity, which is where I was going with that earlier. This whole idea of becoming the niche. You've done this, Leonard. In terms of your industry, I think it's interesting to know if you strip away all the buzzwords, right? And at the end of the day, I think I just paraphrased that, but what do you actually do? You're providing visibility, credibility for people who may or may not know that they could get some sort of visibility around what their profession is. Is that sort of a kind of a nutshell, or did I damage that?
No, you're absolutely right. So people think that media is for the hot, flashy LA professional, right? Or the New York professional, right? It's like they think you got to be Oprah to get in the media. And it's just not true, right? There's millions of articles, there's millions of programs, there's millions of TV shows that are happening every single day. And so to be able to get into one of those, get the credibility from that is what we handle in that first of the three, the brand market grow. We handle that in brand because we need to build the ship before we're trying to get people onboarded to the ship, right? Which happens in marketing. So, to answer your question directly, we are getting our clients in the media that can look like written articles, that can look like TV, that can look like we've got plus their branding and other stuff, right? Setting themselves up online, then we can move into the marketing phase, which is sometimes email marketing, sometimes it's paid marketing, sometimes it's online summits and joint ventures. So we got to put the building blocks of marketing in order. And I do think that PR falls under the marketing umbrella, but we need to put the building blocks in order. And like I said, a lot of people go and they try to start do the marketing. Right. And that's where I started. Right. I was reaching out and no one cared because I didn't have that first step completed.
I think all entrepreneurs, present company included, did the same thing. We were so eager to get money in the bank and prove to ourselves, our egos, right? Like, I can do this, man. I just walked away from $500,000. Not only is this a critical situation for me to make some money fast, but I need to prove to myself that I can do this. So I think all of us, I've never yet, I've been doing this now 20 years. And in 5 years podcasting, have I met a single entrepreneur who didn't start with the market first? Let me make some money first and realize halfway in, maybe even further in. And I work with clients today. I just got off the phone with somebody who has been in business for almost 15 years, busying herself to a near death and trying to figure out how she can simplify her business and really do the few things that she wants to do. And when I take a look at her ecosystem, I'm like, girlfriend, you are all over the place. Like, you don't actually know what you're here to do on this planet yet. You say it, but then you're over here, like, just bending over backwards for everybody. So I think everyone, again, I've never spoken to a single entrepreneur that got that right up front. And I'm not saying they don't exist, but I think we're all very eager to do that. What are most people that you speak to? And I'm interested in learning more about this because one of the things that I've just heavily started, and this is somewhere I'm speaking selfishly here, I'm trying to really expand my personal reputation around where I show up in the workspace, keynotes, workshops, things of that nature. And if that's something you do, I'd like to chat with you about that if I fall into your niche. But what is some of the things that people get wrong about the problems that you solve when you first speak with them?
I think I do a very good job of telling them what we do. So what is something that they get wrong? I
Let me
think
rephrase that. So if I were to come to you and I would say, hey, Leonard, like one of the things I'm really working on right now is trying to get greater visibility around my thought leadership and my zone of genius. I want to show up on keynotes. I want to start putting some workshops out there. I want to be in front of larger audiences, things of that nature. And I just know that this is the way to do it. But you're like, dude, let's take a time out on this and let's reframe that. So what is that no that I generally come to you with and thinking that I have all the kind of like P's and Q's sorted out?
I would think it comes back to putting the building blocks in the wrong order. Like, for instance, a book. A book is a great marketing tool. It's a great credibility tool. You wrote the book on XYZ, so you're the expert. That's great. But it would be better if you took that book and you had it when you launched to an audience, right? And you don't need a book to create an audience. So when people come, sometimes they have a preconceived idea that I need to do this and this, and then I'm going to go to an agency and they're going to help me do it. So really they're looking for an order taker
Got it.
to fulfill on what they want. And there's agencies out there that will do that. They're just going to be like, you want that? Great, we'll do it. But they're not looking at it as how does each one of these bricks fit into the wall? There has to be a trajectory that makes sense. And so if a client's coming to me and they're like, I just need to create a funnel and then run Facebook ads. So can you help me do that? Of course we can. But what's the offer? Who's the audience we're marketing to? Oh, we can help everyone.
You might be able to help everyone, but is that really what you want to do at the end of the day?
Even if you could help everyone, who could you help the best?
Who
Because if you could help,
fills you up, right?
yeah, that makes it about yourself and that's good. We want to be involved and we want to be excited about what we're doing. So, of course, we want to choose clients that we are filled up with when we take them on. But it's also about knowing that I've got a prescribed process, right? And we know that works because it's tried and true over and over again for the past 15 years, right? I've taken the time to develop the process. So, if we're then just being an order taker versus being an advisor, I think that's one of the main misconceptions is that a client would oversimplify it.
Got
If they're
it.
like, even in our discussion, right? I say brand, market, grow. Okay, brand. Well, we think logo, colors, and a website. Okay, but that's like day one conversation, and we've got a whole month to talk about this, right? So there's so much more detail within that. That's
But
what I
when I
would.
say fill up, just so I can clarify that, I think that a lot of times as entrepreneurs, especially as small business owners, we forget that we're also hiring our clients as well. It's not just the other way around. And for me, filling up, what I mean by this is I have taken on clients that were micromanagers that weren't looking for advice. They weren't looking for coaching. They were looking basically for me to check off items on their list and give me orders all day long. And while I can take orders quite successfully, that's not what my zone of genius is. And so when I say fill me up, I'm very intentional about the type of people that I work with because I want to make sure that collaboration is symbiotic. There is going to be a give and a take and a balance, and that so we understand are on the same page how we're going to help each other grow. Because in the process, we are helping each other grow. It's really important for me that I use that lexicon. I just want to make sure
Yeah, and I
that I was
love
clear
that.
on that.
And I love that you said that you're hiring the client as well as they're hiring you. Because I've been in situations before where I'm thinking of a few clients in particular where their expectations are so different
Oh,
than
yeah.
the scope that you originally talked about. And you talked about it. There's a proposal about it. There's a contract about it. And then they're off on left field thinking, like, I don't know how that disparagement happens, but or the disconnection happens, but it does, right? And
Because nobody reads it, that's why. It's just a
well,
staple of paper, so it's really important. I learned that the hard way. So I go through every single piece of document that we send on the onboarding process just so there's zero confusion. I record the calls, I send them a recap of the notes, and I'm like, just so we know, this is what we discussed, this is where we're going next, and then we recap that on every meeting. Yeah, I appreciate that. We live in an age of influence, social media, algorithms, visibility, transparency, trust, authenticity, disingenuous, all these different things that social media has brought us in this digital sphere that we live in. Two parts of this question. What do you think are the most pernicious aspects of being on social media, the most like evil and like harmful? And what do you think, if you were to use it responsibly, the most positive and beneficial aspects of social media are giving entrepreneurs today?
negative is the comments that you hear, right? If you look at human nature from a very like baseline of how we're supposed to inhabit the world, our community is supposed to be about 150 to 300 people. We live in little villages. We know about one woman's pregnant, one man's sick. Okay, like it's very small. And when we hop on social media, now we are our own celebrity. And so we must be able to take on the positive and the negative. Talking about the negative part, the feedback from hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people. And most people, we look at like celebrities, and they say, don't read the negative comments. Just don't read them. Because if you don't read it, it doesn't exist. But then you get to someone who's not a celebrity, and guess what? They're reading every one of those comments and they
Oh,
take it to
yeah,
heart. Right.
absolutely.
So that's definitely the negative side of things. But then
And more importantly, not are they reading those responses? Can I add to that?
they believe it's true.
They believe it's true, but I personally look for the response to the negative comments. I actually want to see how Leonard responds to negative feedback. I would love to get in, because that tells me a lot about who you are. Like, are you diplomatic? Are you graceful? Are you candid? Are you honest? Are you apologetic? Are you apoplectic? I want to know how, and I look at that stuff every single time when I'm looking to hire somebody or work with somebody. I want to see how did you handle the negative press? I read your reviews. How did you respond to them? And if you're like a total dick about it, I'm like, okay, I can see how he handles stress right now. And if I see it twice and three times, I'm like, okay, this is probably not somebody that I want to get into a situation with. So I really love that point. Sorry to interrupt. Back to you.
No, so true. So very true. Because that shows your true character. How are you operating in a positive space? How are you operating when you get negative feedback? And then on the positive side, we all have a little TV in our pocket, right? Our phone is how most of us consume the majority of our media. Just go to your screen time and you'll be shocked.
Yeah.
7 hours to, you're like, what's happening? So when you're in the space of having to be in front of all these people, you want to see the positive side of it. And the positive side is that, guess what? You've got free marketing. You've got free exposure, right? You can hop on TikTok, you can hop on it wherever and be seen by 1,000 people. Contrary to what I said about living in little villages, now we have the ability to impact so many more people.
7.5 billion people potentially is a tagline I drop with people when I'm in front of audiences, because I get a lot of pushback from older entrepreneurs that are like, oh, I hate social media. I got to get up there and do this. And I'm like, stop being an old goat, man. You literally have an audience for the first time, basically free of charge. It's just your time, energy, and resources. It's not free, but in metaphorical terms, it is. Where you could potentially share your little ecosystem with the rest of the world, and somebody would be willing to pay you money for your little slice of heaven. And they're like, but what do I say? What do I do? And I'm just like, so this is okay. That's a perfect opportunity for me to segue. But yeah, 7.5 billion people in the world, most Everybody has access to this little TV. If you had the opportunity to speak to them, what would you say? If you were in a room, you and me, locked door, and you had the opportunity to share something, what would you say? That's what you should do. Start talking about those things. Yeah, I love your take on everything so far. If your audience were to describe you, your brand, your solution, your process, whatever it is that your ecosystem does, in three words, what would you hope they say, and what might they actually say?
I think those two would be the same. I would say competent, effective, and I'm going to use hyphens here so I can meet your three-word requirement.
I
Attention to detail.
like that. That's pretty funny. What is one thing right now that you know you should be doing, whether it's in your business or your professional life or your personal life, that you know you should be doing, but you just haven't made time for yet?
I should be emailing my audience more,
Why is
staying
that so
more
important? Why is that so important?
top of mind, right? People buy from people that they know and trust, but it's about we live in an attention economy, right? What has our attention, right? Whether you like it or not, when the elections roll around, guess what? Everyone's attention is focused there, right? When the Victoria's Secret show comes around, everyone's attention is there. When the Super Bowl comes around, everyone's attention is there. So we live in an attention economy. And so if we can keep the attention of the people on our list, of the people in our audience, guess what? It's like just loving on them. It's being around them. It's always going to the company party and being present. And so if we are able to do that, which I should be doing more of, that's really where we succeed at that attention getting piece.
I wrote a blog post last week on the, and I don't disagree with you, by the way, again, surprise, but there is a lot of noise out there, a lot of people like us that are just contributing into our inbox and our social media, in our feeds, and our, it just becomes noise pollution after a while.
It
So
does.
do you have a sort of a secret sauce that you would recommend to people? How do you break through the noise and stand out with these emails, with these DMs, with these social media posts? What are you doing to stand out in this sea of sameness?
So education, entertainment, smush them together, edutainment.
I love it.
So instead of being sales, buy my stuff, sign up, 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 we need to be a human, right? If I met you, Devo, if we worked in the same building or we were neighbors, I wouldn't come to you every day and be like pushing my stuff. That would feel weird. But we do it online all the time. So the shift there, the pivot, is about providing education in an entertaining way. And the sales will come, right? I'm not saying never sale. I'm never saying don't send a sales email, don't hard sale, don't whatever. There's a time and a place. But if we can take the position, what are we first and foremost? Are we that trusted advisor that's likable, which is the edutainment, right? We're advising them, we're being cheeky about it. Like people, it's building a relationship at scale. People get to know you, they like you, then they trust you inevitably. So that is the preferred way to do it versus just being a straight salesman time and time again.
There is a time and a place to sell, but I think you can still sell unintentionally and still provide value. Because I think, by and large, in today's marketplace, I think most people realize at the end of the day, we are selling something. But if I can latch onto them with some sticky noodles, with something a little bit more magnetic, with some inspiring quotes or education or edutainment or whatever it is that the approach you want to take, I think at the end of the day, we know that I'm selling something to you. But I first want to come at it with, how can I add some value? This know, like, trust piece. So I love that you said that because I don't think a lot of people do that. I think, okay, I've got an email system. I'm just going to blast you with buy from me. And I'm like, bro, if you're a consumer, think about how you receive someone else's information. So why the fuck would you do that right now? When someone blo How many times do you get email and you're just like, spam? Someone is doing that to you if that's how you're going to come at it. So how can you reframe that so that you don't fall into the spam button? So thank you for that take. It's very refreshing to hear you say that. If everything you built today disappeared tomorrow, everything, your business, your impact, your clients, everything, what is one idea, one belief that you would want to outlive you?
One belief, opt for happiness. It's a choice. You can opt for happiness or you can be a realist. I choose to view life and situations through a positive lens, right? Even if something went sideways, it's okay, take a beat. That's unfortunate, but where's the lesson? How do I grow from this? And how do I not have it just be a bad thing that happened, but how do I turn that into a growth opportunity, right? It's like those negative comments, right? Like, how do I take that and be like, okay, but yeah, they didn't really understand, so I'm going to reply with kindness. That's a way of being versus being in the reaction mode and the poo-poo, poor, pitiful me mode. So we've got control over that.
And I didn't hear you say get walked over. That doesn't mean you, being kind doesn't mean that you
No.
allow people to walk all over you. It just means, can you take a more pragmatic, optimistic approach using kindness as a cornerstone of how you approach things? That's what I hear you saying.
Yep, you can be
Yeah.
firm and kind at the same time.
Yeah. And not get walked over. What is a, when you come back and listen to this episode in 4 or 5 weeks, what is, and anybody else listening, is there a specific shift or anything in particular that you hope this episode sparks in someone listening?
I would hope that it sparks someone to believe in themselves, take action, go at it for yourself.
Anybody who is on the precipice of considering to become a corporate refugee, what would you say to them right now?
A corporate refugee.
We're corporate refugees.
That there's always more opportunity when you have the ability to move freely and create for yourself than when you are confined and constricted by that of a company. You might have a lot of freedom. You might have a lot of freedom, a lot of latitude, but there's nothing like working for yourself. I'm not saying that working for a company is bad, right? That's not what we're saying. But for a certain type of person, the entrepreneurial type person, 100% you have more freedom when you work for yourself.
100%.
Yeah, it's just a fact.
And it is not for everybody. It should be asterisk at the end of that statement. Entrepreneurship is not for everyone. You should be very crystal clear on where you stand in that space
Yes.
and know that going into it is not a bed of roses. There is a lot of work, a lot of trial and tribulation, and it is not a linear line. It is a squiggly speed bump, uphill, downhill, wrong turn trajectory. And if you don't have the moxie or the emotional capacity to handle that, then entrepreneurialism is probably not for you. So, before we close, where can people find you? What's the best way to connect with you?
Our website, so we're online at gogeekhouse.com. So GOGEEK, and then house we spell a little bit different. HAUS. So GOGEEK, HAUS, gogeekhouse.com. And then I'll also invite people if they're interested in crawling, maybe walking before they start running in the media space. Podcasting is a great way to do that. So I host a training that helps people who are subject matter experts effort to get themselves online, right? You got to take the steps, but when you're efforting, we want to make sure that you're getting results. So I host the podcast Guest Intensive, which gives you templates and places and platforms, and we really set you up for success to be able to package yourself and promote yourself and really work out your messaging in a setting like this, where, before your 4 minutes on Good Morning America is there, you got to know your stories. You got to know what you're talking about. And so we do that in the podcast Guest Intensive. You're welcome to register. It's for free. Happens every so often. It's a recurring training that I do. Podcastguestintensive.com. And I always say, bring a friend. You're more likely to do it. You're more likely to have fun doing it. So, podcastguestintensive.com.
That's great. Thank you. Leonard, I appreciate your time today on the Branding Laboratory. A lot of really cool nuggets that you dropped. And for anybody who does want to connect a little bit further, all of his credentials will be listed on the show notes below, and we'll put it on the YouTube channel and everything. Great episode. Appreciate your time, energy, and as always, the brand piece is the most important element of running your business, in my humble opinion. If you don't have a brand, you don't have a foundation. And Leonard is proof, and I think heartily agreed with me on that. So
So
thank you, my
agree.
friend. I will chat with you in the green room after the episode ends.
Thanks, Devo.
If today's conversation challenged you or challenged the way you think about branding, identity or how you're showing up in life or in business, please DM me. I would love to either have you as a guest on the show or talk to you a little bit about what you're doing in your ecosystem of your business and how are you showing up and how do you want people to receive you or how are you being received and what's that perception? And if there's any work that we can do together to bridge the gap between where you are and where you'd like to be, that is something that I can potentially help you out with. What a great show. Leonard was a brilliant guest. He had a lot of impactful things to say, some nuggets of wisdom. I don't think I disagreed with anything he had to say. I think we're on the same page. He was like my branding doppelganger, and I'm excited to share this episode with you. Again, if you know somebody who would make a fantastic guest for the Branding Laboratory, this is my open invitation to please forward that information. You can email me directly on the website. You can hit respond to the comments in this episode, depending upon where you're listening to it. We respond to every episode, every comment. And just again, if you do have an idea for a new show, happy to share that with you as well. And that's pretty much it. So have a wonderful day. I know you have choices when it comes to podcasts. There are several million of them out there now. And I appreciate you taking the time and the hour out of your day to listen to Devo today on the Branding Laboratory. I'll see you on the other side. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon.